So we're beginning here on the top of Chav Vav and Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Lo yita dam ilan samuch l'sadei chaveiro." Person should not plant a tree proximate to his friend's field. Elim kein yirchik mimenu arba amot, unless he leaves a proper distance between the tree and the border of the property of 4 amot. Echad gifanim v'echad kod ilan. That's whether it's a vine or a tree. This, as Rashi notes, and the Balei Tosfot, many of the Rishonim, has to do with avodat hakerem. The amount of space that one needs to properly take care of a tree or a vine is that you need a space around it of 4 amot. Those 4 amot allow you to make a U-turn if you're taking a plow or you're taking something through the field. It also gives you enough space, sufficient space, that when you come to pick and you bring the carts there, that there's sufficient space to bring them between the border of the property and your tree or your vine. In addition, if you want to plow that area around the vine, around the tree, you can plow around it without impinging on your friend's rights. So over here, where you're coming close to the border, we want you to leave sufficient space between the border and your tree or your vine, so that when you work on them, you don't have to go into your friend's property. You don't have to enter in his property or impinge on his rights. And therefore, we demand that you leave a minimum of 4 amot. But that is true only if the border is an open border. Haya gader ben taim. If there was a fence between the two fields, meaning now it's not simply that there's a border, but there's actually a physical fence there, zesomech the gader mikan, zesomech the gader mikan. Each one of them is allowed to then bring whatever they're planting up against the wall. Because if the whole purpose of leaving those 4 amot there was to provide you the ability to work around your tree or your vine without entering into your friend's property, we don't have that fear anymore. The wall itself, there's a physical barrier there now that won't allow you to cross over that borderline. Given that, you can plant all the way up against the wall on either side of the wall, because that doesn't impinge on your friend's rights in any way. Rashi, back on Daf Yud Chet Amud Aleph, says that the reason the Mishnah here mentioned both Gifanim and Ilanot is to teach you that there's no problem of Kilei Akerim, that you're allowed to bring a vine all the way against the wall, and on the other side to have Tvuah, grains that are planted all up against the wall. And even though underground their roots will intertwine a little bit, or they will affect each other, nevertheless, there's no din of Kilei Akerim if they are separate on top. And that's what Rashi says is the Chiddush in the Mishnah, that it tells you both Ilan, which would be simple because an Ilan or a tree, we're talking about the work area around it, and that's where we get the 4 amot from. And then if you want to plant it against the wall, fine. But the Chiddush of adding in Gifanim, the vineyards, which is that, first of all, the 4 amot suffice. But more importantly, when there's a wall there, you can put it all the way against the wall, and we don't worry about Kilei Akerim. Balei Tosafot over here said that that can't be the explanation, because in the Gemara, it's going to tell us that the field on the opposite side of the wall is not necessarily a field of grains. It's either a matching field. If you have trees on this side, it's talking about a field that has trees on the other side. If it has a vine on this side, it's talking about a field that has vines on the other side. And therefore, this has no relevance with regards to Kilei Akerim. And therefore, Balei Tosafot over here suggests that the reason the Mishnah says Echad Ilan and Echad Gifanim is to come to teach you that the dinim here are relevant in both cases. Number one, that you shouldn't think that the Dalet Amot, which is called Avodat HaKerem, is only relevant by a vineyard. It's only relevant by vines that you need to use 4 amot, but by Ilan, it would not be relevant. Or the other way around, you could have thought if you only wrote a tree that 4 amot suffice, but by a vine or a vineyard, you might need more. So what it comes to teach you is that the standard of 4 amot is applicable both to a tree and to a vine as well. Then the Mishnah continues and says, "Ayu shorashim yotzim l'toch shel chaveiro." Once you planted this tree, and now there are roots that enter underground into your friend's property. Ma'amik gimel tvachim. He, the friend, is allowed to, or your neighbor is allowed to clear the property down to a depth of 3 tvachim. Kedei shel yakev et ha-machresha. So those roots don't catch the plow when it's going through. The standard depth of a plow is 3 tvachim, and he should be able to plow his field without interference from the roots of your trees. So what he has a right to do is to cut those roots, anything that is above 3 tvachim to the surface, he can cut those away so that his plow can plow without any hindrance of your roots. Haya chofer bor shiach umi'ara. On the other hand, if he wants to go deeper, because here he wants to put in a cistern, he wants to put in some other water storage area, there he's going to go deeper than 3 tvachim, kotzeitz v'yored. He has the right then to cut the roots and keep going down in order to clear the area for what he wants to put in there. Va'etzim shelo. And the wood or the roots that he takes out belong to him. There is a dangling modifier. We don't know who the him is. Is the him the owner of the tree? Or is the him over here the person who's cutting the roots? And that the Gemara will ask, who do the roots, or who does the wood belong to? So in the latter half of the Mishnah, it indicates that when the roots go into the other person's property, first of all, there's no problem with that, the fact that the roots go in there. The only problem with the roots being there, if it inhibits your friend or your neighbor's ability to use his property. And there he has a right then to clear them from the surface down to 3 tefachim, so that his plow can go through the field without them inhibiting his ability to plow the field. Secondly, if he wants to go deeper and put in a cistern or something in his field, he has a right to clear the area going down, including roots that are deeper than 3 tefachim, in order to put in a bore or to make sure that he has the ability to do what he wants inside of his property. Now the Gemara begins. Tana arba amot shamru kedei avodat hakerem. This is what we mentioned in the Mishnah, that the Rishonim were explained. The Mishnah is based on this qualification of the Gemara, that the reason for the 4 amot in the first part of the Mishnah is avodat hakerem, the ability to work these items without going into your friend's field. Amar Shmuel lo shanu elo be'eretz Yisrael. This din of 4 amot is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. Aval bebavel shtei amot. Bavel, you only have to leave 2 amot, not the 4 amot. Rashi claims that the difference is the width of the plows. That the plows in Eretz Yisrael were much wider, they were 4 amot wide, and therefore you have to leave that amount of space. Whereas in Bavel, the plows were narrower, they were 2 amot wide, and therefore you only have to leave in 2 amot, because then you could bring the plow around without going into your friend's property, because they're only 2 amot wide. You look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he adds an additional factor here. He says, L'shonu debin en dal demot el Eretz Yisrael, Shiriglim lachrosh sude ilan bishvarin. Over there they use oxen to pull the plows. Umipnei chozek hakarka. Because of the hardness of the ground or the difficulty of plowing in the ground in Eretz Yisrael, they used to use stronger animals to pull the plows. And therefore they need wider space because they're using oxen, as well as the fact that they need a stronger plow because the land is much more difficult. Aval b'Bavel, shechorshim b'chamorim. In Bavel, where they used smaller animals, they used donkeys instead of oxen because the land was softer. O chofrim, or they dig with their own hands. They do the harisha by hand, not using a plow. B'beit amot, tarchakat sagi, then you only need 2 amot. So here you have multiple reasons that might all point to the same thing, which is the difficulty of plowing in Eretz Yisrael. They might use stronger, bigger plows. They use stronger and bigger animals. And they are working with difficult land. Because of those factors, you need 4 amot wide. Whereas in Bavel, where the land is softer, and they use smaller animals, and the plows themselves might be smaller for that same reason, then you only need 2 amot. Now, these are the defaults. I mean, this is what's true in Eretz Yisrael. This is true in Bavel. But obviously, if there are places in Bavel where it's difficult to plow and then they use bigger animals, or in Eretz Yisrael, there are easier places to plow and they use smaller animals, it would be true that the din of 4 amot to 2 amot would apply to that location. It's not only this way in Eretz Yisrael, only this way in Bavel. They're giving you the general or the generic sense of what happens in these places for these reasons. And then when you go to each location, you can apply whether it looks like Eretz Yisrael or looks like Bavel, and that'll determine how much space you need to leave. Tanya Nami Yochi, we have a braita that supports that in understanding. Lo yita adam ilan samuch l'sadeh chaviro. Person may not put a tree close to his friend's field. Elim ken yachik menu shtei amot. Unless he leaves a distance of 2 amot. V'anan tnan. Doesn't our Mishnah say 4 amot? Elav kidishmoa. It must be that the solution to that stira between the Mishnah and the Braita is like Shmuel. Shma mina. So here you have a proof that Shmuel's distinction is meaningful because you have 2 Tanaic works giving you different measurements. V'ika derami la mirma. Some asked it directly as a stira and see Shmuel's statement not as an independent statement qualifying our Mishnah, but rather a solution to the problem, which is, Tanan, lo yita adam ilan samuch l'sadeh chaviro, elim ken yachik menu 4 amot. Our Mishnah that says you have to leave sufficient space between the vine or the tree and the end of your property of 4 amot. Batanya, and we have a braita that says only 2 amot. Amar Shmuel lo kasha. So here's Shmuel's statement, instead of qualifying our Mishnah, is now coming to answer the difficulty or the stira between that which we see in the Mishnah and the Braita, which is Kan b'Bavel, Kan b'Eretz Yisrael. The Braita is speaking about Bavel, where you have 2 amot, and the Mishnah is speaking about Eretz Yisrael, where you require 4 amot. So, Rava bar Rav Chanan, Havalu hanu diklei, amitzra de pardesa de Rav Yosef. He had these palm trees that were along the border of the orchard or vineyard of Rav Yosef. Hava atu tzipore, they were these birds, yatve b'diklei, they used to perch up in the palm trees, and then they used to go down into the orchards of the vineyard of Rabbi Yosef, and then they would ruin it. So it seems that Rabbi Yosef had difficulty on a number of sides. If you remember, we already saw back on Daf, that Rabbi Yosef had the difficulty with the bloodletters that were opening up shop next to his field, and that was causing the ravens to come in and ruin his fruits. And here we have something of a similar nature where the birds from the adjacent property were causing a problem. Question of whether they're the same story or connected or maybe totally independent. But Amarlei, so Rav Yosef says to Rabbi Baruch Hanan, Zilkotz, go take down the tree. Cut down those trees because they're causing damage to my field. Amarlei, Varchike, Li. He says, I did what the Mishnah demanded. The Mishnah says that you have to distance from the border the trees that you plant for Amot. I complied with the regulations that the Mishnah lays out. Once I've done that, why should I be held responsible for the damage that is happening from these trees into your property? So now, the claims on both sides here are somewhat difficult. Tosafot points out some of them, other Rishonim point out others. So it seems at this point in the Gemara, there's a fundamental machloket between Rabbi Bar Chanan and Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is suggesting that he has a necessity to take the trees down because they're causing damage to Rav Yosef's property. Rav Chanan answers and says, I followed the regulations laid out by the Mishnah. If I follow the regulations, then I should be exempt or indemnified from any damage that happens here because I kept the Memarei Chazal. So Rav Yosef is going to respond to him and say, that doesn't matter. Meaning that the distance that you have to put up the trees, that is a regulation for Avodat HaKerem. That doesn't then automatically mean that you're now exempt from any damage that you do. On the other hand, Rabbi Baruch Hanan believes that the Mishnah, when it's giving you this shiur, it's giving this shiur, and then once you've complied what the Mishnah says, then you don't have any responsibility for Nezek that is being done. And that seems to be the fundamental machloket, the space of four amot that's mentioned in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yosef says it's about a narrow scope of the issue of Avodat HaKerem, but it does not give you exemption for damage. For damage, you would have to then take further precautions. On the other hand, Rabbi Baruch Hanan says, if you follow and comply with the regulations, then you shouldn't have to do any more than that. So Amalei, so Rav Yosef says back to him, Hanim ilan li'ilan givfanim li'gfanim. That's only true if on both sides of the fence you have the same type of item. If you have trees on both sides of the fence, or you have vines on both sides, then the din of the Mishnah applies. The four amot is sufficient because they are not affecting each other from their differences. They're both the same type of tree, plant, vine that is there. And given that, we don't worry about the crossover problem of damage from one to the other. But we do worry about Avodat HaKerem, and therefore you need the four amot. Aval ilan l'kfanim v'inan tvei. But if you put a tree opposite the vineyard over here, we're going to require that you put in more space because the ilan, the tree, is now causing a problem or damage to the vineyard. So this is what the Balei Tosafot marshaled to explain in the Mishnah that the Chiddush of the Mishnah can't be about Kilei HaKerem, because you see here, Rav Yosef explains the Mishnah as being when there's trees on both sides or there are vineyards on both sides, but not in a case where we're talking about Zera, where we're talking about grains on the other side, and therefore he believes the Chiddush is the amount of space you have to leave in those instances is the same for an Ilan and a Geffen. Samalei, Analokaitzna. Rabbi Bar Rav Chanan responds to Rav Yosef and says, I will not cut it down, because Damarav, I dikla the tain kava, if you have a dekel, which is a fruit tree, and it produces a kav worth of fruits, asur lemikzeh, there's a restriction against cutting it down, which we know that there are restrictions in Eretz Yisrael especially, for cutting down productive fruit trees. These are productive fruit trees, and I'm not going to cut them down. Vama Rabbi Chanina, in addition to that, Rabbi Chanina added, lo shachiv. The reason that this individual passed away, now, the next line in the Gemara, it's not clear how to read it. The way that Rashi reads it is that it is Shichat Bri, which is, that's the name of the individual. On the other hand, if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says Shichat HaChishmei Debrei. He was the son of Rabbi Chanina. So according to Rabbeinu Gershom, Rabbi Chanina is speaking about his own son, Shichat. On the other hand, according to Rashi, he's speaking about a third party called Shichat Bri. That the reason that this young child passed away, and the reason for that was that he cut down these fig trees before their time, meaning when they were still productive. And the fact that he cut down these fruit trees, almost a midah keneged midah, he cut down something in its quote-unquote youth, when it was still productive and had the ability to produce more, was cut down. So too, this individual lost his child for that reason. And the pasuk that in the Devarim that says, ki adam etz hasadeh, even though it's really a rhetorical question there, Chazal take it to mean that Adam and Eitz, that there is some sort of parallel between them. Given that, then this is what happened, and I'm not going to go down this path of cutting down fruit trees in order to comply with whatever you're asking over here.
So he says, Mar, inekale, says to Rabbi Yosef, if you're comfortable with doing that, like it, go ahead and cut them down. So what he says to him is, look, I'm not going to do it personally, but if you feel that it's the right thing to do, then go ahead and cut them down. Now again, throughout this issue of the argument between Rav Chanan and Rav Yosef, in each of these cases, their positions seem to be a little strange. As Baal Tosafot already point out, what's the story over here in terms of Rav Chanan saying, I'm not going to cut it down? If they're causing nezek, if they're causing damage, then there's no question that he's obligated to cut them down. And none of these issues that are mentioned about not cutting down productive fruit trees and that the problems that arise from cutting down these productive fruit trees, none of that should be applicable in this case if you're causing nezek to your friend. And therefore, the Baal Tosafot clarify over here. He says, Alma, Bishum Hezek Ifanim, Mutar Lakot Stikalim. He says, it's no question that if they were doing damage to the vines, that he would have to cut down the palm trees. But he does say that you do require a significant loss or a significant amount of damage in order to justify it. Meaning that, in general, if you're causing damage, we're going to hold you responsible and tell you to cut the trees down. But when you're dealing with fruit trees that have a mitigating factor, which is we don't want you to cut them down, then we're going to raise the bar, the threshold, for what is considered enough damage to take them down. And that's what the Baal Tosafot point out. That's what Rav Chanan is saying. Over here, he thought that the damage was not significant enough in order to justify the cutting down of the trees. Rav Yosef, on the other hand, must have felt that it was. So he says to him, if you feel that it is sufficient, go ahead and cut the trees down because you feel that you are justified in doing that. I don't think you have a justification, Rabbi Rav Chanan says, and therefore I'm not going to do it myself. And that's why the Baal Tosafot say that Rabbi Rav Chanan refused to cut down the trees. Baal Tosafot also point out that this situation in which when you have a vineyard on one side and trees on the other side that we demand that you put more space than four amot there is only true when you put them in as trees. Like, for instance, in this case where he's putting in dikalim, he put in palm trees that are very tall, because then the damage is immediate, first of all, and number two is it's caused by what you're doing. On the other hand, if you simply plant seeds on that side, which are four amot away from the other property, then that's not a problem at all, even if they will later grow into trees, because that's not called gire delay. As we noted before, that with regards to gire delay and Rabbi Yossi's position, you have to have immediate damage in order for that to be considered gire delay. Over here, where there's a long time or long term before the tree goes, we already saw Rabbi Yossi in the previous Mishnah indicated that you're not held responsible in that case because it's going to take so long for the tree to go, and you can do whatever you want in your own property. And similarly over here, if he was just putting seeds in the ground, it wouldn't have been a problem. The Rashba notes that the reason that Rabbi Bar Chanan did not agree to cut it down was because Rav Yosef's insistence on his need to cut the trees down was not mi'ikar adin, but rather mi'midat hafsidot or lifnei mishut adin. Or in essence, what he was saying to him is, listen, your trees are doing damage, and I can't demand that you cut them down, but the right thing to do is to cut them down so they don't cause damage to your neighbor. So Rabbi Bar Chanan says, well, here there's a mitigating factor. These are fruit trees. So I personally, we're not going to cut them down because I don't feel that there's an obligation. It's only ifnei mishut adin. But if you feel strongly enough about it, go ahead and cut them down. Or Rabbi Bar Chanan is saying, basically, we have a machloket here as to whether there is an obligation to take these trees down. I don't believe there's an obligation to take these trees down because I fulfilled the requisite distance that was mentioned in the Mishnah. You, Rabbi Yosef, who think that there is a requirement to put in more distance, not like the Mishnah. So if you feel strongly enough about it, and you want to rely on your psak, then go ahead. I'm not going to rely on your psak, because I don't feel, number one, that it's necessary. Number two is, you're a nogeba davar. So therefore, I'm not going to accept the psak. But if you want to accept the psak, and you feel that you are right about this, go ahead and cut them down, but I won't do it myself. Now, in the end, most of the Rishonim and Poskim, Paskin like Rabbi Yosef, that this requirement of the four amot is only in a case where you have tree versus tree or vine versus vine. If you have tree versus vine, then you have to leave more space. The question is, how much more space do you have to leave? What are the numbers that are required? So some suggest that the incident between Rabbi Bar Rav Chanan and Rav Yosef must take in place in Bavel, because they both lived in Bavel. There you only have a requirement of two amot. And therefore, when they said for Gfanim you need more, some suggest that means four amot, not the two amot. Others suggest the distances that we've seen in the previous Mishnayot, which is 50 amot. 50 amot are considered to be the requisite space. 25, 50 amot are the numbers that we used before in order to prevent damage from happening. And so too over here. Others say that it has nothing to do with fixed numbers. It has to do with distancing the damage. Whatever is the requisite or sufficient space between them that won't cause damage, that's what you need to do. But there's no fixed amount that you have to put them away. And so in the end, what made Rabbi Bar Chana responsible over here is one of two possibilities. Either it's because it is gire delay, because people came into his fields, or the workers would come in the fields and then shoo the birds away. And then the birds would all fly into Rabbi Yosef's field, and therefore it was considered to be a gire delay. Or you can say that there was no gire delay over here, and Rabbi Yosef really did not have a claim, mi'ikar ad-din, for him to take it down. Rather, lifnim mishurat ad-din. And then that would play out in the answers that are given later as to whether Rabbi Bar Chanan's refusal to take it down is because he believes this is all midat chesidut, and therefore he won't do it himself, Rabbi Yosef can do it. Or whether he has a fundamental machloket with Rabbi Yosef and believes that Rabbi Yosef is incorrect over here, and that's why he tells Rabbi Yosef to do it himself. He really feels strongly about it, but Rabbi Bar Chanan did not feel that it was necessary for him to take down those trees. And now we have another incident between two Amoraim, which is Rav Papa Avalei Hanu Diklei, a mitzvah de Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. Rav Papa had these palm trees that were sitting on the border of Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua's property. Also Ashvechei Dava Chafar, he saw that Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua was coming and digging down into his property, but Kakaitz Shorashav, and he was cutting the roots of Rav Papa's trees. Amalei, my high. Rav Papa said, what are you doing over here? Why are you cutting the roots of my trees? Amalei, it's none. It's our Mishnah. Are you sure Shim Yotzim L'toch Shel Chaveiro? The roots go into your friend's property. Ma'amik Shlosha Kadesh Yakeva Machrisha. I'm allowed to clear from the surface down to 3 tefachim the roots so they don't block the plow from going through my field. Amalei, so Rav Papa responds and says, Hani Milei Shlosha. That's only for 3 tefachim. Ma'ar Kachafar Tvei. You're digging even deeper. So yeah, it's one thing if you want to take the roots off the surface down to 3 tefachim. But here you are excavating deeper and taking out more roots, going down deeper. Amalei, ano. He says, I'm following the other part of the Mishnah. Barot, shichim me'arot kachafarno. I'm digging my property to put some sort of water storage area there, and I have to go deeper. And the Mishnah says, if you go deeper for those reasons, that you're permitted to cut the roots. Titnan. Eyachufer bor shiachu me'ara kutseitz v'yoreid v'itzim shelo. That's the second half of our Mishnah. So I'm acting within the rule of the law based on what our Mishnah says. Amar Papa. Rav Papa wanted to try to stop him from doing this. And Amri Lei Kulu V'lo Yachile. He gave him all sorts of reasons, all sorts of svarot, why he shouldn't be able to do this. And he was unable to convince him. Now many Rishonim eliminate this from the Girsa, as the Balei Tosafot point out, is because what other proofs does he have? There are no other proofs. So why would you say that he tried to prove it to him if there are no other opportunities or explanations that would give Rav Papa the right? Then the Balei Tosafot in the end do come up with possible claims that he could have made. And based on that, they make these suggestions, which is, Umefaresh Rabbeinu Menachem, Demikulu Hainu Mikol Hani Ditznan, who's bringing a proof from all the Mishnayot earlier in this parak, Imal Ilan Kadam Lo Yikotz, Safek, so on and so forth, that if the Ilan is there first, you don't have a right to cut it down. It didn't work. That was only talking about the tree itself. But the roots you have a right to cut down. Rav Huna was cutting the roots and then keeping the wood for himself. And then Rav Papa says, what are you doing keeping the roots for yourself? You might have a right to cut them, but the wood belongs to me. And then he brought in proof, which is all of these proofs that we have over here, which is the upcoming Gemara that we're going to discuss about what are the status of roots. And in each of those cases, he rejected those answers the way that the Gemara is going to reject those explanations. So Balei Tosafot gave two possibilities as to what the proofs are that he brought and that were rejected. Otherwise, Rishonim believed that there are no other proofs, and therefore they eliminate this line from the Gemara. Ad Amrile, until he came to the proof that was the trump card, where Rav Papa says to him, Ad Amar of Yehuda, Meitzar Sheikhaziku Bo Rabim, Asur the Kalkalo. When you have a piece of property, even private property, that the public at large had permission to use, once they've taken possession of it, the private person cannot take that back. He cannot remove the easement that the public at large has established in this area. Rashi over your claims, to compare it to that case, just like the Rabim, when they come through the field, they take ownership, in a sense, of that area because they've been using it. So to over here, my trees have been here, and my trees were here first. And since my trees were here first and their roots went in there, I have a right. They have, in a sense, an easement to grow in your property, and you don't have a right to come and cut those roots down. Or the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom enhances it and says, that this has been here forever. They were here with my fathers, my forefathers. These trees have been here for a very long time. And therefore, they have gained the right to remain here, despite the fact that it might inhibit your ability to use your property the way you like. So that's the way the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom explain it. The Baal Tosafot already questioned that, and most of the Rishonim questioned the comparison, for a simple reason that you have to differentiate between private individuals and the public at large. The public can establish an easement which cannot be taken back by a single individual because, in general, the Rabbim, the public has stronger powers. And if they've established or they've gotten rights to go through here, you can't revoke those rights because the Rabbim has taken possession of it, whether that's because you can't negotiate with the Rabbim or because the Rabbim has that power which cannot be removed. But in either case, it's something that belongs to the Rabbim. When you have a single individual, two neighbors, there's no such thing as one neighbor then gets the right to use or utilize the area because his other neighbor didn't say anything or has been there forever. Those rights don't exist or are not granted to a single individual. And so therefore, many Rishonim don't understand how Rashi sees the reasoning of Rav Papa as an outcome from the case of Meitzar Shechiziko Bo Rabim. And therefore, the Baal Tosafot offer an alternative, which is Peirush Rabbeinu Chananel v'Rivam, the Rabbim Chiziku b'Mitzrei, the Rabbi Huna u'Bir Shuto. That the situation here is where Rabbi Huna, on the edge of his property, had allowed the Rabbim to walk through there, and they had established a path or an easement through there, and they walked there u'Bir Shuto. And of course, is with his permission. Dilav Chalfi en Chiz Kalto Moelet, because without his permission, it wouldn't help. We saw that already earlier in the Baal Tosafot, that easements only help when you have a right to be there. You can't go there illegally and then establish a right. So once they establish their rights over there, then after Rav Huna b'kachafar b'shut Rabim, Rav Huna comes along, he's digging into the Shut Rabim and cutting off the Shorashim of Rav Papa. And Rav Papa says back to him, wait a minute, how are you doing this? The Rabim already owns this property. You don't have a right to put a bore or put a cistern here in the middle of this path that the Rabim has established. Since you don't have a right to do that, you also don't have a right to take out my roots or cut down my roots. On the other hand, we already saw from the Rabbeinu Tam that he offers that the machloker, the question here, revolves around who owns the roots. That Rav Papa did not disagree with Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua's rights to cut the roots. He disagreed with him keeping the roots. And he says, no, you can't keep the roots. You have to give the roots to me. And his proof is from the Meitzar Shechiziku Bo Rabim, which is that even though this is the private property of Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, the Rabbim can establish rights here to utilize it, even at the expense of Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. And it's similar over here. The fact that my roots have gone there, so yes, you have a right, me, Tama Mishnah, to come and cut those roots down, but that does not mean that I have forfeited my rights or my ownership to those roots. So yes, you have a right to cut them, but just like when the Rabbim takes possession of this area, Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua can't throw them out and cannot hurt their rights. So to over here, my chazaka, like the chazaka of the Rabbim, establishes that these are my roots. Because of the damage or the problem that they caused for you utilizing your property, that gives you a right then to cut them, but not to keep them. And that was the machloket between them, and that's where Rav Papa finally trumped Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, according to Rabbeinu Tam, and saying that the wood belongs to me because of this chazaka. According to the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rivam, the reason is because this is a makom shech zikubo rabim, and therefore you have no right to dig a cistern over there. If you don't have a right to dig, you don't have the right to cut my roots in that location. Or, according to Rashi, it's because once you've established a right in an easement of sorts, you can't come now and change that after the fact. And we already discussed that many of the Rishonim don't feel that that is a fair comparison. Then the Gemara says, the Vater Nofak, after he left, Amar, he said, Amai lo armile, why didn't I say to him, Kan betok sheshes rama, Kan chutz le sheshes rama, this is within 16 amot, that is outside of 16 amot. So again, here, it's not clear who is speaking and after who left. I mean, is this something that Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says, I should have said to Rav Papa, because his proof to stop me from either cutting the roots or taking these roots is not good because of this other statement. And that's what Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua is saying, I should have said this back to him. I had a proper defense to what he was saying. Or is this Rav Papa speaking after the fact and saying that I had a better proof? I used this Meitzar Shechiziku Bo Rabim, but actually, had I used this, I would have even had a better proof, and I could have stopped Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua from doing what he was doing. So that is a machloket in the Rishonim as to whom is speaking over here. Rashi believes over here, Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, the reason I could have defended my position over here is because, B'tok Sheshes Rama, Li'ilan, if you're within 16 amot of whatever the base is of the tree, then those roots belong to the tree, and the rights of those roots to be there that are attached to the tree remain, and I can't cut through them. But in a case where it's outside of 16 amot, that chazaka is not a good chazaka. Even though we know roots extend at least 25 amot, because the Mishnah requires that you put a distance of 25 amot between a tree and a cistern, in an yukim, they're not the major source of nourishment for the tree. Only the first 16 amot are those that are essential to the sustenance of the nourishment of the tree. And therefore, Chazal only gave you rights of 16 amot of circumference around, of a radius around the tree for those roots that belong to you, and roots, rights of roots that I cannot take away. On the other hand, where the roots extend beyond the 16 amot, I should be able to keep them. And that's what Rav Huna Breid Rav Shua is saying. He should have said this because Rav Papa was saying that you don't have rights. He was digging more than 16 amot away from the tree, and he should be able to cut the roots and tell Rav Papa that it's fine. And that's why he was upset that he didn't make that claim. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot, who explained before, according to Rivam and Rabbeinu Hananel, that over here he was digging in an area that was 16 amot, the Rabbim had taken a place, a walkway through his property. Now, the Rishut Rabbim is only 16 amot wide. In the end, their path was wider than 16 amot. And say he was digging in an area, putting in a bore beyond the 16 amot. And that is his claim over here, which is that up to 16 amot, the Rabbim can claim. Beyond the 16 amot, they can't claim that because it's just too much space. I'm not hurting the Rabbim if I take back space up to 16 amot. And I'm digging beyond the 16 amot. If that's the case, I have a right to dig down, and I also have a right to cut the roots of your tree. And that's where Rav Yehuna Breid Rav Shua was bemoaning the fact that he wasn't digging in the first 16 amot, which belonged to the Rabbim. He was digging a little beyond that. And that should have given him the right to take out the roots of Rav Papa, and he should not have acquiesced to what Rav Papa was saying. The Rabbeinu Tam, Lashitato, suggests that the statement here is Rav Papa's statement because he believes, we saw earlier, that the proofs that Rav Papa brought against Rav Huna Breid Yeshua were the upcoming part of the Gemara about what we're about to read about this issue of the difference between 16 amot and less than 16 amot. And so the person who was bemoaning over here was Rav Papa. He says, I had a better proof. I shouldn't have spoken about Meitzar Shechaziku Bo Rabim. Should have spoken about the difference between within 16 amot and beyond 16 amot. And that would have shown that within 16 amot of the tree, the roots belong to the owner of the tree. And that would have been the trump card that I had to stop Rav Huna Breid Rav Shua from acting the way he did. So if you explained it according to Rav Rabbeinu Tam, the Shita To, then you would say that the statement here is Rav Papa. But even if you do explain like Rabbeinu Tam, it still could be that the statement here is, as we explained before, that of Rav Huna Breid Rav Shua saying that he was doing this outside of 16 amot radius from the base of the tree. And that's why he had a right to keep the wood, and he shouldn't have acquiesced to give it to Rav Papa. Now the Gemara says, Ayachu fer bor shiach umera kutzeitz. That was what we saw in the Mishnah, that if you're digging a cistern or going to do a deeper excavation, you're allowed to take out all the roots, and the roots belong to him. Who is the him? Yaakov Hadaiva Mirav Chista. Daiva is the location of the place that he was from. So he asked of him, Eitzim Shalmi, who does it belong to? Amalei Tinitua. We have a Mishnah that indicates to us to whom it belongs. So it's not clear here that the Eitzim belong to him, whether it belongs to the one cutting the roots, or belongs to the owner of the tree. And he says, we can learn it out from this Mishnah that deals with Mi'ila, which is Shoshei Ilan Shel Hejot. We have roots from a tree that belongs to a layperson. V'abain v'shel Hekdesh. The roots extend from the layperson's field into the field of Hekdesh. Lo Nehenin v'lo Mo'alin. Generally, that terminology, when it's used in the Mishnah, means that there is no Mi'ila Mido'oraita. Mi'ila Mido'oraita means the misappropriation of Hekdesh, which obligates you to repay Hekdesh, add on a fifth, and bring a korban. So when it says lo mo'alim velo nehenin, it means that mina Torah, it's not considered to be mi'ila. Lo nehenin, we don't get benefit from it, means midrabanan, we still say it is asur. So that is the code term for lo nehenin velo mo'alim. That's what it means in the Mishnah, that it's an isur derabanan, not an isur d'oraita. And he says, Iyamart, if you say bishlamo batar ilan azlinan, if you believe that the roots of the tree belong to the tree, therefore, mishumachi lo ma'alin. That's why there's no mi'ilah midoraita over here. Despite the fact that the roots of this tree of the layperson are now taking nourishment from a field of Hekdesh, despite the fact it's not a problem because the roots remain the property of the person who owns the tree. And the tree is clearly in the property of this layperson. That's why there's no mi'ilah. Now we say it's not nice to do it. Lo nenin, we don't want you to do this. We don't want you getting benefit from Hekdesh, but it's not full-fledged mi'ilah midoraita because the roots belong to the Hejot. Where it says, Ilamart batar karka azlinan, On the other hand, if you say that wherever the property line is, that determines who the roots belong to, I'm Ailo Moalin. Why is there no Me'ilah anymore? Once the roots cross over into the property of Ekdesh, they belong to Ekdesh, according to that reasoning. If that's the case, if you took those roots and benefit from them, you would be in violation of Me'ilah Doraita. Okay, so we'll accept your explanation here. Batar Ilan Azlina. We go after the tree. The tree dictates to where the roots belong. Ema Sefer, what are you going to do with the latter half of that din from Me'ilah, which says, Shelekdesh Habayim Mishal Hejot. If the tree is in the property of Ekdesh, and the roots are extending into the layperson's property, lo nehenin velo moalin. Once again, you have the same statement, which is, there's no mi'ilah de'oraita, but there is an isur midrabanan. V'ibatar ilan azlinan. If we accept your explanation that the roots always follow the tree, amai lo moalin. Why is there no mi'ilah over here? Because if the tree is in Hekdesh's property, it's a tree of Hekdesh. The tree is of Ekdesh, then the roots follow the tree, the roots are also Ekdesh, even if they're in the late person's property. If he cuts them, should be chayav and milah do right, according to that reasoning. And you have to be consistent in your reasoning. If you always go after the tree, then in a case where it's the late person's tree going to Ekdesh, there is no milah do right. But vice versa, when it's a tree of Ekdesh going to the late person's property, there should be milah. But that's not what you're seeing. In both cases, we say that it is only an Isser milah de Rabbanan, and not an Isser milah do right. Where it says, midayiriyah. Wait a minute. You can't claim that's the case. There's something else that you need to know over here. That is, b'gidulin, habayin lachar mikan askinan. We're talking about things that grow after the fact. V'kasavar, and that author of that Mishnah, or that Mishnah's found the position, that ain mi'ilah b'gidulin. There's no such thing as mi'ilah for things that grow after the fact. Happens to be a Mishnah in the fourth parak in Psachim that deals with this, as to what is the status of something that you are makdish. And then after the fact, after you've been magdishit, it continues to grow or add on things to it. In that instance, are the new growths considered to be akdesh, or is the new growth considered to be chulin? And that is a machlokit over there. What the Gemara is suggesting, that this Mishnah follows the position that growth after the fact is considered to be chulin. And as Rashi notes over here, mishum da'anach shorashim gidulim habayim la'achar shugdash ha'ilanu. These roots that grow and extend into the layperson's property are roots that grow after the tree was already made in Tekdesh. There is a position in the Masechet Mi'ilah, also echoed in the Gemara Psachim. There's no such thing as Mi'ilah with things that grow after the fact. It doesn't even have to be that the roots went into the lay person's property. Could it even be a case where the tree is in Hekdesh's property and the roots are in Hekdesh's property, but because the roots grew after the fact, after it was already Hekdesh, they are considered to be Chulin. Now, given that, the question is, then why did the Mishnah bring that case? And that's what the Balei Tosafot ask over here. It doesn't make so much sense that the Mishnah brings cases where it's growing into the Hedjot's property, when the better proof that you could have brought, had this been the opinion of the Mishnah, is to simply say it's a tree of Hekdesh, in Hekdesh, the roots that grow are not considered to be Mi'ilah Doraita because they are Gidulim. Why is it speaking about a case where it's growing into the Hedjot's property? So the Balei Tosafot answer and suggests one of two possibilities. Either another girsa in the Gemara, which is, Ela hacha b'gidulim abar la'achar mikan. And he says, V'yesh varim d'garsi midei iria ha b'gidulim. How can you bring any proof from this? This time at gidulim. Jose divye amakshe. These are all from the questioner's wording. Klomar, al korkachach lo tuchol lifshot mikan. You can't prove anything from this. Tanaic work. We're dealing with things that come after the fact. And when you're talking about gidulim that come after the fact, then there's nothing you could prove from this Mishnah. We're not sure. We don't know whether the author of the Mishnah thinks that. But given that piece of information, then you can't prove anything as to the position or the thinking of the individual who is the author of that Mishnah, because you have this other overarching problem, which is that things that grow after it's been Hekdesh, they may not be subject to Mi'ilah at all. Given that trump card on the outside, then you can't prove anything from the Mishnah. And this is all a part of the questioner's position saying, you can't say this, or you can't prove anything from it. On the other hand, the way that our Gemara reads is that the questioner ended, and then this is the response to that. The response to that is to explain why there is a difference between them. And that's what the Balei Tosafot say later on. Rabbeinu Chanan lo garis ela. He does not have a girsa ela. V'amitareitzu de kamar. This is an answer to the question. Hachi de muki seifa de en mi'ilah b'gidulin. That you're going to establish the seifa as being a case where there is no mi'ilah b'gidulin. In essence, what he's saying is that the author of the Mishnah, like we proved before, believes that the roots always go after the tree. And that means that in a case of a tree in a layperson's property, the roots are going to be considered chulin. There's not going to be no mila d'oraita because the roots follow the tree. On the other hand, in the case of the latter part of the Mishnah, when you're talking about a tree of hekdesh, there also there's not going to be mi'ila, but not for the same reason. Not because the roots that extend from the tree of hekdesh are considered to be hekdesh or not considered to be hekdesh, it's because gidulim. This is a specific din within hekdesh that things that grow after the fact don't have a din in hekdesh. And given that, there's no din of mi'ila. And that's why this is an answer to the whole problem. And now we've established the fact that the roots always follow the tree. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom when he says that apagav the ika lemeimar the yoniku mishel hekdesh. Even though when you have a tree in a layperson's property that's going into the property of hekdesh and it's drawing nourishment from the property of hekdesh, lo ma'alin, there is no mila the shadina nikaro but the ilan. We established that the roots or the tree itself are connected to the, wherever the trunk of the tree is, where the tree resides. And therefore they have a din of property of hejot and there is no mi'ila. Whereas with the tree of hekdesh, it would be true in the opposite, that a tree of hekdesh, the roots should be hekdesh. With exception or the qualification that hekdesh has a special rule saying that when something grows after it's been mukdash, that it doesn't take on the properties of hekdesh or remains kulin. And that's why there's no mi'ila in that case where the roots of hekdesh extend into the property of the hedjot, not because the roots are not considered a part of the ikar, a part of the original tree. But then we have that last question, which is then why didn't the Mishnah just state it straight out? You could add a tree of hekdesh in a property of hekdesh, take the roots, you'd still be patur. The Baal Yom Tosafot come and suggest that that's because they wanted to create, shown the Baal Minka Dumya de Reisha. They wanted to create a case that was parallel to the Reisha. They wanted the Reisha and Seifa to have parallel cases. De'ein akol hekdesh. That there's a mixture of hekdesh and layperson's ownership over here. In the ratio, it's a chiddush because the layperson's ownership trumps that of hekdesh, and hekdesh has no rights whatsoever. In the second half of the Mishnah, it doesn't show that because of this unique case with hekdesh, but then you still end up with a scenario that is similar to the ratio that teaches you this din about gidulei hekdesh. And that's why Tosafot says the Mishnah used this type of scenario to keep parallel cases, to give you the same din in both cases, which is lo ma'alim ve'lo ne'anim. And then from that, we can learn both dinim. The first din is that when it's a layperson's tree and roots, there is no mi'ila. And the other way around, where there is a tree of hekdesh, even if it remains an hekdesh's property, the roots are not subject to mi'ila because it's gidulei hekdesh to come after the fact. Ravina amar, Ravina suggests, lo kasha, kan betoch sheshesrei ama, kan chutz l'sheshesrei ama, that there is no stira over here. The difference has to do with how far the roots are away from the tree. So the way that Rashi reads this is that this is explaining the two piskei halacha in the case from Mi'ila. The reason in the Reisha that we say that the roots follow the tree and therefore you are not chayav in Mi'ila is because those roots were then 16 amot of the trunk or the core, the base of the tree. On the other hand, in the Sefer where we say that it's a tree of Ekdesh, and the roots are not subject to mi'ilah. That's talking about roots that extend beyond the 16 amot. Since they go beyond 16 amot, they do not have a din of mi'ilah because they're not considered to be under the sphere of influence or the ownership of hekdesh anymore. And that will explain the difference between the reisha and the seifa. Ein hochanami, the roots follow the tree, but there is a limitation to that. It's only up to 16 amot. So in the case of the reisha, there, the roots we're speaking about are within 16 amot of the tree. And the seifa, we're speaking about those roots that are beyond the 16 amot of the tree. So then the Baal Yom Tosafot asks, that's a little strange to set up a case where the one after the case is talking about within 16 amot, the one outside of 16 amot without mentioning that qualification. The Baal Yom Tosafot say, like we mentioned before, that they wanted to have the din of lo ne'anin and lo mo'alin come out in both cases. So in the ratio, they did that by making it within the 16 amot. And the Sefer, they did that to be beyond the 16 amot. And that's what it's teaching you, that despite the fact that within 16 amot, it belongs to Hejot, there's still a din derabonon of mi'ilah. And in the other scenario where it's beyond the 16 amot of Ekdesh, we still say there's an issur derabanan, even though it's beyond the 16 amot and should be classified as chulin. The Rabbeinu Gershom, you can see, enhances what Rashi says. Matnina diktani ayitzim shalmi. The Mishnah, our Mishnah says, who do the ayitzim belong to? In betoch tetzayin ama. If you're doing it within 16 amot, chufer v'kutzeitz v'hen shel bala ilan. They belong to the owner of the tree. If he's digging outside of the 16 amot sphere of the tree, then he can cut the wood and he keep them for himself. And so that's how we parlay what was written in that case in Mi'ilah to our case over here, which is to tell us or teach us the din of 16 amot. That things within 16 amot are classified to be under the ownership of the tree owner. And things outside of 16 amot are whoever digs it up, whoever's field they are, that wood or those roots belong to that individual. And therefore, if he cuts them, he can keep them for himself. And this is what, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, were the other proofs that Rav Papa brought to undermine the position of Huna Bereid Rav Shua, was this thing, this proof here, that we have this whole sugya trying to discuss or determine who the wood belongs to. Because that's what Rabbeinu Tam says the whole question or argument between them was, and Rav Papa was trying to bring a proof from here that you can see that the roots do belong to the owner of the tree. And he rejected that by saying the answer that we gave before, because then you can't explain the seifa. In the end, Ravina gives an answer that trumps the problem that we have with that explanation in Mi'ilah. It says, I can explain the ratio and the seifa in Mi'ilah by differentiating between six timot and not. And that's what Ravina Tam says the conclusion of the previous sugya was, that Rav Papa said, I should have mentioned this, this would have been my trump card to say there's a difference between within 16 amot and outside of 16 amot, the answer the Ravina gives at the end of our sugya to keep the Mishnah and Me'ilah intact to say that the Reisha and Sefer are explainable. Okay, we're going to begin here the next sugya. It continues on to the next daf. It's a very complicated sugya. And I have diagrams that I have posted on the website. You could look at them to explain the mathematics behind it. But here we have a statement from Ula, which says, Amar Ula, Ilana Samuch Lemetzar, a person who plants a tree next to the boundary or border of his friend's property, Toch Sheshes Reyama, if it's within 16 amot of your friend's property, Gazlanu, you are a thief, Vein Mivin Mimenu Bikurim, and therefore you have no right to bring Bikurim to the Mikdash. Rashi over here says that that is, he can opt out. Ain't Sarich Lavi Mimenu Bikurim, you're not obligated to bring up the Bikurim because you can't say Parshat Bikurim, because Parshat Bikurim says, Ashir Tavi Marzecha, that you bring it from your land. These fruits are not the produce of your land. They're the produce of your land and your neighbor's land, because they are sustained or drawing nourishment from your neighbor's land. Given that, you do have a problem in bringing up the Bikurim. If you want to bring them up and not say Mikra Bikurim, that's fine, but there's no obligation anymore to bring them up. On the other hand, the Bali of Tosafot bring from the Beinu Hananel that Mishum De'eme Vin Gezel Agabe Mizbeach, that this is a restriction, an absolute restriction. You may not bring these Bikurim up because you are a thief. And when it comes to theft, Hashem is Soneh Betza, he hates theft and corruption. And therefore, you're not allowed to bring theft on the Mizbeach. It's the whole first parak in Yishayahu that we ring on Shabbat Chazon, that the problem of people stealing, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want those types of gifts or presents before him. And Bikurim are a type of korban or things that are brought to the Mizbeach. Therefore, if this is a product of theft, it's asur to bring them. Bayit Tosvot then ask on this position, the Rabbeinu Hananel, but trying to understand Ula in a greater context, as to who does Ula hold like? Because Ula has to rely on one of two Tanaim that we've seen in the Mishnayot until now, either Rabbonon, the Tanakama, or Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, you can plant in your property anywhere you want, and you're not responsible for it because you did what you're allowed to do in your property. Even though later on your roots might extend, that's not your problem. According to that, then what's Ula's statement mean? So he clearly can't be like Rabbi Yossi, and Bali is supposed to say, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, and that would mean that Ula's din is not the Alocha. Now, if he holds like the Chachamim, the Chachamim already established in the Mishnah that four amot is sufficient amount of space put between the tree and the other property. So where did this 16 amot come from? So the Bali Tosafot then come to explain how Ula could hold like the Chachamim, and that is to suggest that the Mishnayot that we're speaking to at until now, which says that you only have to put four amot between the tree and the other person's property, is a case of Tsunama, where there are bedrock that sits between the properties, and therefore we don't worry about the roots extending over to the other person's property. In that case, four amot is sufficient, because then you only need avodat hakerem. But if there was not bedrock there, then the rule would be 16 amot. Based on that, he's relying on the sheet of the chachamim of four amot, but four amot without bedrock there. Given there's no bedrock, you have a separate problem, not just avodat hakerem. You have the problem that the roots are extending into your friend's field, and you are stealing from your friend. That theft prevents you from bringing the bikurim to the mikdash. That's how the Bayit Tosavot explained that position of the Beinu Hananel. In the end, they say that it makes much more sense to them to say like Rashi, to say that there's a technical problem here and not real theft. Now, the truth is that the Chachamim believe you can plant within four amot of the other person's property. Rabbi Yossi believes you can plant anywhere you want as long as it's in your property. And we don't worry about the fact that the roots go into the other property. And that's true. Midinei nizakin, that's true. You have a technical problem, which is it's asher tavi marzecha. The bikurim are not from your land. And since they're not from your land, that's what causes the issue over here. That's what prevents you from bringing the Bikurim up to the Mikdash. But it's not because it's Gezel, but rather because you can't say Mikra Bikurim. In that way, the Bayit Tosafot favor the explanation of Rashi. Now the Gemara is going to go to try to discover the source for Ula's 16 Amot. Nale Ula, ha. Where did Ula get these 16 Amot from? Where does he know that up to 16 Amot is the area that a tree nourishes? Again, we'll begin with this thing. We'll start a little bit of it, and then It will continue in tomorrow's daf with a fuller explanation for the mathematics and what is being said over here. The first proof, the Gemara says, Ilema miditanat. Is it from this Mishnah that we find in Shvi'it? Eser nitiyot. If you have 10 young saplings, hamufuzarot, that are equally distributed betoch beitza'a, over an area that is a beitza'a, a beitza'a time we know from the Mishkan is the Chatzera Mishkan, which is 50 by 100 amot. That means that each sa'a, or area of a beitza'a, is 50 by 50 amot, or 2,500 square amot. So there, if you have a field that has these 10 saplings planted, it evenly distributed over an area of beitza'a, you get a special dispensation going into the Shemitah year. There is a din of Tosefet Shemitah, whether it's Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim or a Halacha Midei Rabbanan, that you're not allowed to work the fields, not only on Shvi'it itself, but even at the end of the sixth year. There are certain exceptions to that. This is one of those exceptions where we let you plow the field for the saplings all the way up to Rosh Hashanah of the seventh year. And that is Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, which gives you this special permission. That special permission is granted when you have a setup like this of 10 saplings and a field that is a Beit Sa'a or 2,500 square amot. So now, if you look at this, Kol Beit Sa'a Bishvilan Arosh Hoshim Kol Beit Sa'a Bishvilan Arosh Hashanah. We give you permission not only to plow around the trees for the benefit of the trees themselves, we let you plow the entire area of the Beit Sa'a, the 2,500 square amot, because that is considered to be beneficial for the trees. So the assumption of the Gemara is, if they're equally distributed over the field, that means it's telling you that when you plow an area over a field, that is efficacious or beneficial to the trees in that area. So if you could understand what the square area taken up by each tree is, then you would establish the amount of area around them that is considered to be the yinika, or what they are deriving their nourishment from. So kama havaluhu, how much is an area of a beitza? Trealfin v'chamesh mea garmide. It's 2,500 square amot. So now, the chol chad v'chad kama, if I have 10 trees evenly distributed over an area of 2,500 square amot, matile matan v'chamshin. So if you take 2,500 square amot and you divide it up into the trees, that means each tree would then get 250 square amot. That means now, if you look at the area of 250 square amot, which would be 250 square amot for each tree, then Ula is demanding that you have 16 amot in each direction. So if you take the diameter over there, you're talking about 32 amot in each direction. So that'd be 32 squared, which turns out to be 1,024 square amot, which is significantly bigger than the 250 square amot that are being applied or suggested here for the Eser Nitiyot, that each Nitiyah has that area around it that it is nourishing from. So that can't be the source for the fact that Ula thinks that you need 16 amot around a tree in order to determine the area of its nourishment or where it sustained itself from. That's what the Gemara says. L'chol chad v'chad kami matule. How much belongs to each tree based on 2,500 square amot? Matan v'chamshin. That's 250 amot square amot. Halohavid Ula. That's not enough to get up to the size of Ula. It's a significantly smaller area than that which Ula suggested. So, and we're going to stop here. Two lines on the bottom of Chavavam Adbet and continue with those calculations tomorrow.